We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on? Welcome to another BuzzBeat episode. This is Richie, and I'm glad you guys are joining us today. In this episode, I'm going to be joined by a returning guest. I'm also going to be joined by Brian to reflect on the season and discuss some individual players from the 23-24 season. We will be titling this series, The Standout Skill, and focusing mostly on the positives here with these players. And we hope to have maybe three or four of these episodes within the series and covering the players that played, you know, heavy minutes, I guess, if you want to consider it that, and also players that are still on the Hornets roster. Before we dive into the episode, I wanted to remind everyone to take a minute out of your day and rate and review the podcast on Apple or Spotify. Also, look into buzzbeat.substack.com for premium content where you can get ad-free episodes and early access to episodes. So today, Brian and I are joined by Trust the Buzz, Darian. And actually, he's not just a guest anymore. He's an official member of the BuzzBeat team moving forward. We are happy to bring you on. We may even have some episodes that are exclusive to your YouTube channel. So we'll kind of talk about that as we go. But we're still going to give those regular episodes. We just got another member of the team here. How's it going, Darian?
It's going great. I'm so glad to, you know, be a part of the team. You know, I think we're going to be a lot better than what the Hornets have been putting on the court. But this is the dream team, and I'm excited to be here.
Good, good. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing well. I think I finally have recovered a little bit from the end of the college basketball season and some travel. And I've been able to, the last couple of weeks, been going through the backlog with some Hornets games that I've missed during the NCAA tournament, which has basically just been like the best Brandon Miller games that took place during that stretch. So I'm actually in the middle of the Cleveland Cavaliers Hornets games from March 27th that I'm watching right now, along with some other college hoops offseason content. But very excited to get back to the pod and excited to talk some Hornets. And yeah, welcome in Darian to the team. We've done probably a handful of pods together already, so excited to just keep it rolling and what's going to be, I think, a pretty, potentially pretty like eventful and busy offseason with the Hornets. So enjoying going through that while also getting ready for the draft and certainly like watching as much playoffs, NBA playoffs as possible too.
Yeah. So this episode, we're going to focus on three players, LaMelo Ball, Davis Bertans, and Trey Mann, and we'll talk about their standout skill. And we'll start with LaMelo here. And I think this was, in terms of his availability, his most disappointing season, only having played 22 games, missing 60 of those 82. And I'm going to run down some stats here before passing it over to you guys and kind of give your general thoughts on Ball as we get into this past season, and then we'll get into his biggest strength. So he finished with 23.9 points, 50% on twos, 36% on threes, 8 assists, and just over 5 rebounds per game. He also had a stretch in November where he just went off, averaging 32 points, 7 rebounds, and 8 assists. So Darian, before we list our standout skill for LaMelo this past season, just kind of give me your overall thoughts on him, the player, the injury, just everything that surrounds this guy as we look back on this season.
I think this year was a year where he had that stretch that you were talking about, was the LaMelo stretch. That's kind of what we've been looking for from him. I mean, I'm not saying he hasn't done that in the past, but that is kind of what we've, as Hornets fans, for the most part, have said. You know, he's not going to average 30, but we were like, if LaMelo's completely healthy with a decent team, even though I think he was, you know, kind of outperforming the team by a lot during that time, it was a lot of just him. This is what it's going to look like. And I think we got a good idea of that. It also was, I think it was meaningful for LaMelo because it was coming off him at the beginning of the season just not playing that well. And we were a little concerned. I think we found out during that time that Steve Clifford's like him and Mark Williams just now came are officially back from injury. So it kind of cleared things up a little bit. So we were like, okay, we'll deal with LaMelo struggling, you know, a little longer. And then all of a sudden, like you said, the 9-game stretch where he's averaging 30 points, he just looked like a complete player. That was kind of like the best part of it for me. Maybe I should say complete offensive player because I know some people might nitpick and say, what about the defense? But offensively, I think he was doing everything you want him to do. He was still taking the deep threes, which is very LaMelo fashion, but he also was getting to the basket. He was getting fouls called. It was just everything that we've been looking for him to be able to do since we really knew what we had. So whether you could say you knew that his rookie season or maybe the year after, but ever since we knew what we had in LaMelo, I think it all came together during that stretch. Unfortunately, it was short-lived, but I think that it was good enough to where I believe that that's who he is. I don't think it was a fluke or anything like that. As far as the injury, I don't really know what to think of it. The injury is just the hardest part because with a bad team, it's hard to tell I think I've said this before specifically on here, but it's hard to tell where the injuries start and where like the team management starts because the team isn't good. There's really just no need to rush him out there. There's no need to play him when he doesn't need to play. So with the team being as bad as we were, it's just really difficult to tell kind of when one ended and the other began. So I really can't have any true thoughts on that. I do hope that if the ankle brace is what works, then I hope that works. If whatever other format they feel is works for him, because I know he has to be comfortable as well, I hope it works. I think the injury is a problem, but it is hard to tell how much did that injury keep him out and how much of it was, hey, we're not doing anything this season. Let's just not play him. So once we kind of find that out, I think I have a better opinion on it. But as of now, that's kind of where I stand.
Yeah, it was an interesting season for LaMelo. Started off very poorly and then started to play great. And I think there were I would not highlight these as like his actual like top skill, but I did think there was some interesting development in terms of like some of the LaMelo micro skills that we've talked about a lot. We saw him, you know, he was still struggling finishing at the rim, but we saw him getting downhill a little bit more frequently. We saw him getting to the line with greater frequency. This season, it's only 22 games. It's barely over 700 minutes. So like you do want to be careful prorating this stuff out and comparing it to previous full seasons of his. But 5.3 free throw attempts per 36 minutes. Again, if you're just going on his basketball reference page, I mean, that's a season high. But again, I can't put too much weight on that. I thought even some of the, you know, some of the pick and roll, like playmaking, some of that is him getting downhill more. But I also thought him sort of being willing to do the Steve Nash style, you know, dribble from the right side of the rim. And instead of trying to force something up, coming out on the left side and then sort of like squaring up and either looking to make a pass or looking to just hit like a little short jump shot where he's very good in that little short mid-range zone. I think all of that's good stuff. Really, I just the opportunities missed are such a bummer because like I just would have loved to have seen more of him and Mark Williams together as a pick and roll 1-2, like barely saw those guys play together this season. Would have loved to have seen he and Brandon Miller more. I mean, maybe the lack of LaMelo allowed Miller to get maybe some more on ball reps, or it allowed them to feature Rozier in a way that made him more appealing to Miami. Like maybe there's some unintended, like weird benefits that come with the, you know, LaMelo being forced to miss time. But like, he's one of my favorite basketball players in the world to watch. I really miss not getting to see him, much of him, the last two seasons. And it just would have been interesting to see how long he could have, if possible, how long he could have sustained the stretch that he was on, because like he was playing like an all-star you know, in early December. And then it all sort of goes out the window. But look, if I had to pick sort of like one defining skill for LaMelo Ball, I think I would go with his shooting touch. 87% from the line this season, 83% from the line for his career, 37% three-point shooter. LaMelo on short mid-range attempts this season, 46%. You know, he's got that sort of like feathery touch with his runner. He's maybe a little too dependent on that, especially when he sees drop coverage. Shot 40% on runners this season in the half court, according to Synergy Sports. These are all like very good to pretty good numbers. And for a guy 6'7" with that passing capability, that to me is really the thing that can truly help him, tap into, maybe some special scoring potential. You mix that in with, a better pick and roll partner with more Mark Williams, hopefully next season, and with maybe some added strength and just sort of better driving, then all of a sudden that can maybe even – he can tap into the shooting in more like slightly more selective situations and just sort of like bump up his overall offensive efficiency while like scaling at still a like pretty high, high usage, high assist player, a guy that's got the ball in his hands and is running a lot of pick and rolls. I'm excited to see like how he continues to blend it with Brandon Miller. But yeah, I think I would go shooting touch for LaMelo as far as his like defining skill. I do hope if we are trying to answer these questions in 12 months, I'm kind of hoping that like the skill, the micro skill of his that I'm coming back to is sort of like the defining one. I do kind of hope it gets back to like the all floor passing, the vision, the court mapping. I feel like I haven't seen enough of that in recent years. As the team has been terrible, it's been plagued with injuries. He's been plagued with injuries. They haven't really been a serious team for, two full seasons now. But I want to get back to like the sort of like wow level passes that we saw so frequently with LaMelo in his rookie season and in his second year.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is the reason, but you almost wonder, Borrego, like, did that unlock or did that, like, you know, push him to do that a little bit more? Not saying that Clifford, you know, hampered him in that aspect, but it does seem like he did not have a lot of that this past couple of seasons. But, Yeah, shooting touch. That's a good one to highlight. I think the creativity with his passing is something that you would hope that would jump up a little bit more. I almost chose his ability to get downhill for this exercise. You can maybe even talk about his disruption and passing lanes on defense, but I feel like that was more of a thing, you know, several years ago. For the exercise, I chose this past season for the standout skill for LaMelo Ball was actually his three-point shooting from distance, like deep three-point shooting. Now, that may be weird to say because if you look at his efficiency numbers outside of his rookie season, this is his lowest percentage from behind the arc. But I like how LaMelo like leveraged the distance shooting into other things on offense. And so I looked this up. I'm going to quiz you guys. I know that he doesn't probably qualify in terms of volume when it comes to other players. His average distance on above the break threes this year, again, this is a smaller sample size, was 27.5 feet. Where do you think that ranks among NBA players if he was kind of in that qualified category, 27.5 feet?
I'm going to say second.
I was going to say
Trae Young.
I would say, yeah, because there's like a handful of guys that I would throw into this: Trae, Steph, Lillard, maybe Halliburton. I would put him, I'll go fourth for LaMelo.
So that average distance on above the break threes actually ranks first overall. Wow. Now, again, wow. It probably would have dipped over the course of the season just because of the volume. But, you know, he's taken a, you know, good bit of shots from behind the arc. And I think this happens to unlock so many other parts of his game. He can, you know, he can be a threat so high up on the court. It forces defense to be pulled away from the rim. Brian, to your point, if he can get that pick and roll partner on a more consistent level, more consistent basis, it forces the defense to make a decision. If the if the defender can't fight over the top of the screen, LaMelo's getting downhill and he's going to get to that shooting touch that you talk about, where he's very good at creating shots for himself, but also kicking out to teammates and just forcing the defense to work. Now, if the defender sags off, he has the opportunity to pull up from 26, 27, 28 feet. So you want the ball in LaMelo's hands as much as possible, just because he finds ways to score. He finds others in scoring opportunities. It's just a threat that you need. And it's so funny. I remember having this conversation coming out of Australia, some of these draft scouting pods that we did, and his three-point shot was really a question mark. I think his mechanics, his shot selection were a thing that we talked about a lot. So it's crazy to think that he's turned this around. I think he simplified some of his lower body mechanics. It's got a little bit more control down there. I mean, his shot selection is not perfect, but it's been toned down. So I do think that his three-point shot is a threat, and it opens up so many other parts of his game, and not just him, but for others as well. So that's what I chose, Darian.
I'm glad we kind of already talked about this, but I chose his ability to get fouled. That's something he just wasn't doing in the past. And I know that, as Brian said, that the free throw percentages, or not the percentages, but the amount he'd go to the free throw line, I know it hasn't changed dramatically. And then also, you know, got a small sample size. But watching the film, the way he's able to penetrate and then kind of keep the defender on his hip and have them initiate the contact, I think that has something that's really worked out for him, because he's getting fouls for that. I think that he's putting the defender in a tough predicament. And I know part of it is he's exaggerating fouls a lot more, which I say is something that the whole team, I feel like we need to do more of. Because if you watch, a lot of times we play teams and we get bad foul calls on us. At least that's what it seems like. I know somebody could be a fan of another team and say otherwise. Everybody could say that about their favorite team. But it really felt like with the Hornets the last couple of years, especially this year, that there was just some fouls that did not go our way. And a lot of times that I felt as though that was because of the fact that we don't exaggerate. And I think LaMelo Ball has done a good job of, once the defender initiates contact, he's able to kind of flail himself up and kind of get the call, because it is a foul. But if you don't react to it, most of the time the ref is not going to call it. So I think LaMelo's done a good job of kind of adding that to his game. But the main part of it is just being able to put that pressure on the defense, and kind of also to what Brian said about the Steve Nash attempts or the Steve Nash dribbles that has played. If you look at a lot of his fouls that he's drawing, a lot of that was the case. He would come from the right side. Then the defender would jump, and he'd go up on the left side and get the foul. And I think another thing about that is he's really good at getting a shot up. I watched a lot of his, a lot of times he got fouled and he gets the shot up. And I feel like he gives up halfway thinking, oh, I already got fouled, I'm gonna just toss this up. But I think that he does a good job of at least giving himself the opportunity to get the and one. I feel like if he focuses a little more on that, and maybe it does, you know, it goes into maybe his lack of finishing through contact and finishing at the rim. I think maybe if he works on that a little more, I think it'll be better off for him, because a lot of times when he's getting fouled, the ball is almost going in. I think if he put a little more effort in going up instead of just kind of doing the basketball thing where everybody just throws it up for the sake of throwing it up, I think he can really get some shots to go down. We saw a lot of that with Terry Rozier. I think Terry Rozier was really good at that. LaMelo, I don't know if he's got it from Terry or what, but I think it's something that if he focuses a little more on, that's an extra point, or, you know, extra possible point right there if he converts at the free throw line. So I just think he's done it. I watched a lot of film of him doing it against Bam, who we all know is a really good defender in the NBA. He's done it against a lot of players where he puts the pressure on them and makes them foul him. And then adding the exaggeration that unfortunately is in today's NBA, I think it's just going to even do more wonders for him. And some of it is just the superstar calls. I think some of it is just he wasn't getting that before. And I think that complaining has worked. I know that we, you know, as fans, it takes away from the game a little bit, but it seems like it's worked, because last year he was getting thrown around. And I would like to say this about him getting fouled. He takes ugly falls. I think that's part of it that needs to work. That he needs to work on is keeping that balance, because when he does get fouled, he throws the ball up, he just kind of like flops on the floor. And I think it's real contact. I don't think he's throwing himself to the ground, but he doesn't brace himself at all. He takes the contact and falls straight to the floor. And when I was watching the fouls, it just seemed like every single one of them was a nasty fall. And I remember watching those games where you hold your breath for a second because you're like, oh, is he okay? Those are things that his ability to just get fouled and allow himself to get fouled and kind of keep playing through the foul, I think is a micro skill that was mentioned earlier of his that I think has really taken a big step.
It's important to remember, a guy with that size and length, with his ability, with his feel for the game, his ability to manipulate, he should be a guy that, even if he is a little skinny, you know, should be able to draw more fouls. Here's some numbers that, again, all of this comes with the obvious, you know, small sample caveat, but in terms of his pick and roll efficiency this season, LaMelo Ball, when he uses the possession, so these are ones where he either shot it, drew a foul, or passed it, or turned the ball over out of the pick and roll. This season, LaMelo Ball, 0.98 points per possession. These are 245 possessions, easily his most used possession type according to Synergy. That's very good. Like, both in terms of, like, in the limited sample size, like, very high frequency in terms of pick and roll, and very efficient. That's easily, like, the best, you know, pick and roll efficiency number of his career. Out of the pick and roll this season, LaMelo Ball shot 51.6% on twos and 37.3% on threes. Those two, also very good numbers. And it would just be fascinating to see what that would look like if you could just stretch it out for a full season. Again, these are like all-star, primary initiator numbers, right? Like that's what those are for. If you could do that for 65 games instead of 22. Here's another big number in terms of his pick and roll ball handling possessions. On out of the pick and roll this season, 9% of his ball handling possessions he drew a shooting foul on. That too is a career high, up from 4% last season, 4.5% 2 years ago, and 7% his rookie season. So it's a little interesting. I mean, like, obviously, no surprise, like, as he's getting into the line more and drawing more fouls, certainly a lot of that is going to come out of the pick and roll. And so I'm curious to see where he, you know, what steps, if any, he's able to take in terms of growth running the pick and roll next season. Does Mark Williams help? Does the spacing and gravity of Brandon Miller on the wing help? Can LaMelo get off the ball, move around, get back on it, and then look for a catch and shoot three or another ball screen with 7 seconds on the possession? Like, that's the kind of stuff I'm really interested to see next year with him, just in terms of like growth. And it'll be interesting to see where the pick and roll pull up three lands too. I've said this for years now. If he could sort of like geek out more coverages and force opposing centers to come up closer to the level of the screen, then it would give him more playmaking opportunities as a passer. And that would really, really allow him to shine. So he's a pretty good pull-up three-point shooter out of the pick and roll, but can he take a jump and then also just like stay on the floor and keep it up for a full season? Because he could just sort of like create some really open looks for the Hornets, by just being like a nails, you know, high volume pull up 3-point shooter. You know, not everyone can do that, but he has the shooting touch and has shown some of the indicators that he might be able to do that or be something close to that. So that's what I will be paying attention to a lot next year. I said it coming into the season and just didn't get to see a lot of it. So curious to see how things go in year five and the first year of his Supermax, or not Supermax, but his max rookie extension.
Yeah. So standout skills for Brian, shooting touch. Darian talked about the foul drawing, and I talked about the distance shooting. I did misspeak. I guess Trey Young did average 28 feet on his above the break threes. Maybe he wasn't among the qualified players because he's missed like 25, 30 games this year. So maybe that's why he wasn't in the original list that I saw. But we will flip it over to Davis Bertans. Davis Bertans, since the trade to Charlotte, has averaged 8.8 points, 1.8 rebounds, 50% on 2-point attempts, but those were only 32 field goal attempts from two. He had 176 3-point attempts in Charlotte, and he shot 37.5%. Now, again, before we get into the standout skill, I think this conversation around Bertans is going to be an interesting topic of conversation this offseason because of his contract. He's got an early termination option, which I see no reason why he'd even entertain that. He's got a contract that's partially guaranteed as well for $5.25 million of his $16 million. And I checked this the other day, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but his fully guaranteed date, I thought it was in the summer, but it sounds like it's in January of next year, of 2025. So that's interesting. So maybe more incentive for the Hornets to kind of keep him on this offseason.
That's a really interesting, caveat to the deal. And it does make him like, he's a good guy to have around because he doesn't need the ball and he can shoot. And that's like a great number for facilitating trades.
Yeah, exactly.
In the offseason or into next year ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, so I was gonna pass it over to you, Brian. Like, before we get to his standout skill, like, what do you think of Bertans as a player moving forward on this roster, and maybe a little bit about his contract situation?
Yeah, I think it's all additive, right? Like, he's super easy to move. He's a veteran. That's a good thing to have. In his shooting, he can just help amplify any lineup that he's in. Like, he's not just like a pretty good tall shooter. Like, he is an advanced movement shooter for a guy at 6'9", 6'10". Obviously, teams go at him defensively. I mean, how many times this season alone have we seen teams try to put him in the pick and roll, or they use the guy he's guarding to set one of those early pistol ball screens so they can just try to force the Hornets to switch or force him to hedge and recover? Like, he's got a target on his back. But, like, I don't really care about that. This team's not going to be that good next season. And, like, he can really shoot. And so I think he just, for a guy that can come off the bench, doesn't need to start, and he can help open the floor for LaMelo and Grant Williams and Brandon Miller and Mark Williams in the spread pick and roll, or whomever the Hornets draft, you know, with the, with the top whatever pick this year. It's all good. And so Bertans is a good guy to have around. And then again, he can certainly, at those numbers, you can use him in a couple of different ways to facilitate a trade. And I could see the Hornets. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like sellers at the deadline next season. You know what I mean? And so, or ahead of the deadline. So, perhaps Bertans could be of use in that capacity.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, he's a very limited player, but he does have a big specialty. Like, I think that has to be his biggest strength. Like, we could sit here and try to be cute with his, you know, his strongest skill here, but we're not making any earth-shattering statements when we say his biggest strength is his three-point shot making. And to your point, Brian, like, it's not just as simple as, like, easy shots. Like, these are difficult shots. There's not a lot of space. His body's not always facing the basket. He's got the ability to convert on all types of three-point shots. And they may not be the, you know, the most quality shots, but if you want a player on this roster to take a shot that's a little bit off kilter, one that he's not facing the basket, like, he's been good at those type of shots. He's not going to create a shot on his own. Like, he's not going to break down a defender and pull up from three, but you can get him off movement. You can get him off screens, and, you know, you can almost use him in a similar way to Rozier, but he's just a taller guy.
They use him in some of the movement sets that they would use with Rozier. Like, he and Miller and Curry at times this year, those guys became like the movement guys once Rozier had moved on. And like, it's really hard to guard. And like, you do see opposing teams put smaller guys on him because he's not like really a catch and go guy. And he's not going to like, you know, sort of like leverage his size to like beat up a mismatch, but he can also use that to, with a high release point, to get shots off. And it's the movement with him that makes it pretty special. There just aren't that many guys with that size that can shoot like he does, coming off hard movement. And not just like relocations and, you know, pick and pops, but like coming off screens, coming flying off handoffs, deep wing threes in transition. And the 3-point numbers for him this season, pretty impressive. 40% on threes, on spot ups, 42%. This is with the Hornets, mind you. 42% on threes coming off of screens, 46% on threes in transition, 29% on threes off of a handoff. So yeah, these are all like, these are tough shots, right? And so he can bend defenses, even though he doesn't create his own shot, he can still bend a defense. And also punish a defense that's not, you know, navigating screens or handling those exchanges correctly, because he's got size and he can really, really shoot the hell out of the ball.
And I want to say that to both of your points, I think on a team like the Hornets, it just makes him even more valuable. As Richie said, that skill set that he provides, we're not going to get cute with it. It's very valuable in the league in general. And he is a kind of almost a one-dimensional player. But for a team like the Hornets, who we really didn't have that, it just amplifies how credible it can be for the team. And if they are serious about competing, especially early off in the season, I think that could be like a make or break thing, is having someone that size with that ability, because I really don't think there's anybody else that we can trust them doing it outside of Brandon Miller. And then maybe Seth, but I still don't. Seth's contract information, I looked it up one time, but I'm not quite sure. I think he's just like an option. So, and I think it's at like a $4 million or $2.5 million, something like that. So I don't even know if they're going to bring him back. I would like for them to bring him back so we can have multiple people who can kind of give us that skill. But if they don't, Bertans is going to be the guy that we're really going to look for. And he's efficient at it. I mean, Bertans is almost like a Mariano Rivera like cutter. Like, you know it's coming, but you still got to stop it. I mean, I think he's shooting at a pretty good rate, considering everybody knows what he's going to do. Everybody knows how we're going to use him. So just being on the Hornets, I think it just makes it even better about his skill set, because like being on OKC, obviously it was a little different because they have so many guys that they can rely on. And some of them probably don't even do it as well as he does, but they still have guys who can do it. Before the trade deadline, we really didn't have anyone outside of Terry, and Terry did so much so many other things, it was kind of just like that was almost an afterthought. So I think that Bertans is just going to be really good for us if we just do decide to keep him. But at the end of the day, if he ends up being trade filler, then by all means. I still don't know where the Hornets are going to quite be. I hear all the rah-rah about them being a good team, but I just need to see. I'm done hoping at the beginning before the season starts.
I can't tell if you're going to be a positive addition to this team or a negative one or a pessimistic one, because Lee was always the positive one.
Yeah. I think I tend to being – I don't think of myself as like a cynic, but I do think I'm like a realist with this team, and I've been pretty aggressive in terms of wanting them to like lean into a rebuild, which they've always been sort of like reluctant to do. And like – I think for pretty obvious reasons, it's something they should either like directly or indirectly consider for next season, because like, I mean, they're probably not going to do it. I'm sure they're going to like try to make some stuff happen, but like they, you know, that they owe a pick to San Antonio. I mean, it's pretty well protected. My guess is they'll hang on to it, but they could, I guess, in theory, lose that if they made the playoffs. And like, the 2025 draft is shaping up to be pretty good. So like, it wouldn't be a bad one to have another top five pick in.
I wanted them to rebuild that year. We lost to the Hawks in the play-in. That was the year I was like, let's just go ahead and rebuild. And it didn't. And I mean, it kind of looked good, but I felt like I saw the writing on the wall. And then the year after, of course, with Miles, I wanted them to rebuild. And then they didn't do that either. So I don't know. If I was being completely honest, I don't think we quite have it yet. But it's just really hard to be even just sure or have any type of hope, because everybody's always injured. So I don't even know what we have, you know, essentially. I know what we have in theory, but as far as what we see on the court, like
just like which Eastern Conference playoff teams are going to like take a step back next season? Like Boston's here to stay. I think New York is. I mean, Milwaukee's still going to have Giannis. Cleveland's young. They're getting like they've been very good for a couple of years now. Orlando's getting better. They'll probably make a big addition this offseason. The Pacers are good. Who knows with Philadelphia, but you got to think if you can actually get a full season of Embiid and Maxey, they'll be really good. Miami's always tough. Like, I mean, after like that's – it's just hard. I'm sure like one or two of those teams will take some steps back, but like a team like, you know, Toronto might be ready to like take a step up. Or maybe Atlanta, depending on how they handle their business this offseason with Trae Young or DeJounte Murray. So it's just sort of like, I think even if the Hornets could like move into being like a play-in team, I still think they're going to end up being capped at, you know, like a top.
Is it worth it? Like, is it even worth
it? No, I mean, I don't believe so, but
I don't think so either.
I get obviously I understand like the sentiment from fans who are tired of this and want to see them like be competitive and be good. I get it. I just think it's tough net to be patient now, because like they have some good young players on the roster. The time for them to be patient was probably like a couple of seasons ago, but they never had the patience to do anything beyond a 1 year rebuild. They're lucky that it netted them Brandon Miller, like, cause he was awesome this season. And he's a huge piece for them going forward. So it at least got them that with last year being a terrible lost year. And I'll be fascinated to see how the draft is going to be a huge night for them. It's just like, this is unfortunately is like not a great draft to have like a top five pick in. And doesn't mean you can't get a good player or perhaps a like foundational player, but next year is like really the year to be like aiming for that. I don't know if that's what will happen, but I think especially as like the Hornets are like netted a couple other picks at the deadline this year, you don't want to see one of the ones that was sort of like already quasi out the window to San Antonio to be fully conveyed. Like you want that to convey as 2 second round picks, not a 2021 first round pick or 2025 first round pick, excuse me. And so, yeah, you want to hang on to that. So that's why, like, I do think next season you should be cautious. And I'm hoping a new regime with a new head coach, maybe some of the players feel like they're ready for that. But my hope would be that you're bringing in this a totally new front, like total turnover in front office and coaching staff, that might mean there's going to be a little bit of like break pressure, you know, on them next season, and that they're going to be a little more patient than a front office that's like hell, we've got to go for it so we can keep our jobs. You know, we got to try to make the play. Like, hopefully there's a longer runway and there's a little bit more patience thinking beyond just 2025, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So circling back to Bertans, I think we can all agree that his movement, 3-point shooting is a standout skill. You guys didn't have another one, did you?
I mean, it's a lot. We're just throwing shade on his point of attack defense.
Yes.
But, you know, it's a,
we'll save that for a later date.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. I wanted to highlight his deflections, but it's probably not worth getting into. But let's go over to the last player for this episode one of the standout skill. That's Trey Mann. Played in 28 games in Charlotte, averaged 11.9 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.2 assists. He shot 50.9% on twos, 35% on above the break threes, and then 41% on 9 corner attempts. I think the interesting thing about Trey Mann is his position. Like, he's a ball handler who loves to play on ball, but I don't know if you would really classify him as a like true surefire point guard. But also, by the same token, he's not a guy that you see coming off a lot of screens and catching a ton off of movement. Like, he can relocate for like spacing purposes, but he's not a guy that's coming off floppy action, running full speed and you know, creating these distances between him and his man. But yeah, I do like his playmaking. I do like his on the ball stuff where he can get north south. He's got more of that in him than I think people want to admit, but there's still something there that doesn't scream backup point guard. So I think this one we might have a little bit more variation. Darian, I'll let you start. Talk about your thoughts about Trey Mann and get into maybe his standout skill that you saw this season.
I remember when Trey Mann was coming out of Florida. I thought he was a really good player there. And he did a little bit of everything there at a pretty high rate or high efficiency. But really what stuck out was his scoring. So when he came to Charlotte, I think the thing that surprised me the most, not saying that I didn't think he had skill, but I just didn't think he would more so do it, was that he was a little more hesitant than I thought he would be, because at Florida he was a scorer. That's what he did. And even his times at OKC, he was scoring. I know he did other things as well, like passing. He's always been a good passer. And that kind of goes into what my skill is going to be, but he's always been a good passer. He's a pretty good rebounder, better than I thought. And another thing is his ability to just make deflections, steal the ball, ability to play the passing lanes, I think, surprised me as well. But to say that I just thought he would just be a little more assertive when it came to scoring. And at times you wanted that from him. You wanted him to kind of take a little more control, because, you know, Meeches had no problem putting up 15, 13 shots at times. But Trey Mann, on the other hand, would only take like 7 or 8 and look to pass more. And so my skill I picked because I knew he was a good passer already, but I didn't expect the vision. I think his vision is really what did it for me. And the first game I really, really noticed it. I can't remember if this was the first game after the trade deadline or the second, but it was a game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And he was driving from, like, I think it was like the right side. And he was going to the rim. And I think I want to say it was Conchar. I don't even know if Conchar is on the Grizzlies, but either way, it was Conchar. So Conchar tried to get behind Trey Mann, and Trey Mann, I guess, felt the pressure behind him. But before he drove, he saw Brandon Miller kind of sitting at the wing, and I felt like he like scanned the court. Like, you can literally see in the seconds he scanned the court and then didn't even look at Brandon Miller, because I think he saw Brandon Miller when he was driving and just kicked it to Brandon Miller for an open three, and Brandon Miller made it. So that was kind of where I was like, did he really just scan the floor? Did that just happen to go to Brandon Miller? So that was something I kept rewinding back, even in real time as the game was happening. And I was like, oh no, he really scanned the floor and, you know, kind of was aware of his surrounding. So when I was kind of preparing for this podcast, I went back and saw his possessions, you know, someone with OKC, and it was a lot. He was doing a lot of that. He was able to get the ball to the dunker spot for Jalen Williams, not J Dub, but J Will. He was able to get the ball to the dunker spot. A lot of things we saw Trey Mann do with Nick Richards, he was doing with J Will, and even Chet Holmgren at times in OKC. And I think the difference is with Charlotte, it looked like he was a little more hesitant, as I mentioned. In OKC, it looked like it was a little more planned. It was a little more, this is what I'm going to do. In Charlotte, it just felt as though he's just trying to be one with the team, not trying to step on any toes, not trying to do too much. But in OKC, granted, I will say the minutes he was being asked to play, if you look at like his minute time in OKC, you know, this just specifically speaking this year, they were beating people. I think at one time I saw them beating the Trailblazers by like 40. So, of course, the timing of the game was a little different. So it kind of makes sense for that. But I just was really impressed with his vision. He's able to kind of look off defenders. I wasn't expecting that. And he always has made the pass where, you know, you drive and you know someone's in the corner. But I think he just does a really good job of knowing – of identifying who is helping and where they're helping from. I think that's something that I just didn't expect from him because he's able to get the ball to a lot of guys who are open who you wouldn't think he saw them. Obviously he did, or else he wouldn't be able to get them the ball. But off at the initial play, you wouldn't think he even saw that guy because that guy was across the court or behind him. But he's always analyzing the floor. And you could maybe say that's more basketball IQ than vision. But to me, you can see the processing. Whether it's the pick and roll, whether it's him ISO, and I think he's really good at kind of breaking down a defender and forcing someone to help and then getting the ball to the person that's left open. I think he just does a good job of creating those passing attempts for himself. So that's probably my biggest thing with Trey Mann was his vision. But honestly, you could say a lot because I just thought he was a scorer. I knew he could do other things based on his time at Florida, but I thought really this one skill was his scoring. But he's shown he did a lot more.
I still think his like top most his like most defined and special skill. I would have said this leading into the 2021 draft with him coming out of Florida. I'd say it now after getting to see him play a lot this year with Charlotte. It is the space creation. Like with the basketball in his hands, this guy it is legitimately special. Like I'm not sure if Trey Mann is like. If there's a role for him yet on like a winning team, I'm not sure if he's like a winning player. I'm not sure like what his ceiling is quite yet, but make no mistake, like his ability to create space one-on-one is, you know, either in isolation or coming out of the pick and roll. It's pretty special. Like he can light guys up. He's got incredible lower body mechanics. You see him, those shin angles, he's so close to the ground. And he looks kind of like Kemba at times, this ability to sort of like immediate, like plant, stop, you know, pull back crossover and have the defender flying in the other direction. And all of a sudden he's able to kind of either get to a step back three, or he can look to sort of like drive in the opposite direction if he's able to kind of keep the handle going. It's pretty special stuff. And it's the thing that like, one, makes him entertaining to watch just like as an observer of the team, but also makes you wonder like if there is still something there, because the stuff that those sort of like space creation moves, like they work against real NBA defenders. But as y'all were sort of just like laying out at the top with him, he's at this kind of like weird, you know, almost like tweener archetype between sort of these two, like a couple like dominant, you know, backup guard archetypes, right? Like he's not the microwave scorer. It seems like that maybe would be the thing he could do, but like he kind of is like a little bit more like, you know, pass happy, and it just doesn't, you know, he's not like the Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford type, even if he has some of like the creation moves to him, but he's also not like a pure table setter, and he's not like a defensive stopper, you know, TJ McConnell type off the bench, right? Like he has some good traits defensively at times too, with his ability to be disruptive there, but so it's just like, can you find him something that like, can you find a role for him and can you scale it to a level on a team that's trying to win basketball games? Like that's going to be fascinating. That's going to be the challenge. But like in this period right now where the Hornets are getting to try stuff out, like I think he's a great player to have around. And I really do like his offensive skill. I think his work on empty corner pick and roll with Nick Richards and with Grant Williams, you know, either they go like empty corner pick and roll, or they go drag pick and roll with an empty corner, or they go, you know, pistol action in that flows into an empty corner screen with Richards or Williams. I like that. I'd like to see him get to work some with Mark Williams next year. He's been able to work out kick out passes for Brandon Miller threes in the opposite slot. He can hit the lob pass. He can make a pocket pass. So like, he's got legit, like, you know, a sort of like bench, you know, lead bench creator guard roles. Like he can make a lot of passes. He's got good feel. He can create his own shot. He doesn't need a ball screen to get open. Like There's some really interesting stuff there. I'm just not sure yet, sort of like where he settles in terms of role. You know, I kind of think like, it's like, can he ever get to a point where like, can he ever figure out a role sort of like the way like Malik Monk did? Because like Monk is another, you know, very good bench guard now for Sacramento. I think a guy like Monk, maybe he's closer to sort of like the microwave bench scorer, but part of what makes Monk special is his table setting, right? It's the passing, it's the playmaking, it's the triple handoff stuff that he can get to. And man doesn't need the basketball. Like he shot spot up threes very well for Charlotte, but the thing that like makes him special is sort of like the on ball stuff. So just like some guys take a little bit more time, and at least hopefully in Charlotte, it seems like he's got some runway to work with. I guess it could get crowded though a little bit in the backup guard room next year, depending on like, you know, how Nick Smith develops, you know, maybe what the long-term plans are for Bryce McGowan's, what happens in the draft. So, but it does seem like there's a chance for him to get some opportunity here. And I'm curious to see how man looks going, you know, into next season.
All right. I'll end on my little piece here. I was going to highlight his like on ball dribble moves, his separation, but I figured you were going to do that, Brian. So I'm going to go with his ability, and Darian kind of mentioned this, to anticipate passes, to disrupt plays on the defensive end. One-on-one, he's not a guy that is going to deter a lot of players from getting inside the lane, like just because of his size. I think where you see his biggest impact on defense is through his steals, through his deflections, through those loose balls. He's going to get his hand in passing lanes and jump those potential assists and turn it into offense the other way. And just some stats to highlight this before we wrap up here. Man averaged 1.9 steals per 36 minutes this past season. That ranked 16th in the NBA. He also did it without fouling. He averaged 1.06 steals per personal foul. That ranked 9th in the NBA. And then the last thing I'll mention when it comes to deflection, since February 10th, which was his first game in a Hornets uniform, he tallied a total of 84 deflections. That was 10th in the NBA, more than SGA, more than Paul George, more than Wemby. Like, this is good company to be a part of. So I liked how we had some variation here with Trey Mann. Maybe that speaks to, you know, him not having one true standout skill, but you can talk about the vision like Darian talked about. You can talk about the on-ball creation and the separation that Brian talked about. But defensively, you got to give him credit for just being in the right places. And James in the chat says he has a nice feel for the game, always in the right spot, it seems. Any final thoughts on this exercise? I thought it was a good one. We will get to more episodes in the coming weeks with more players. But Darian, Brian, any other thoughts before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think the team is hopefully, you know, evaluating these players and picking up what we're picking up on. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining live on the video version, or to most of you guys who are listening to the audio version. We will continue this Standout Skills series with 3 or 4 more episodes. For Brian, for Darian, I'm Richie. Take care, and we will talk to you guys next time.